has developed a super space and super field formalism. And so our first step would be to start with a Hamiltonian of supersymmetric quantum mechanics. And so it takes this form, plus 1/2 f prime squared, and then we have minus 1/2 commutator of psi double prime. And we want to rephrase it as a quantum field theory, 0 plus 1 dimensional quantum field theory. And so what we will show that there is a corresponding effective action that give rise to this Hamiltonian. And so if I think about field phi here, so phi is a generalized coordinate here in these quantum mechanics. So in order to go to quantum field theory, we will think about this. Well, first, once we quantize it, it's an operator, and we can think of this. So that operator, if we interpret it as an operator in the Heisenberg representation, then we can think of this as being a field. And so what we would like to do, so the same will be for psi and psi dagger, okay? So what we will derive today is that there is a one-dimensional quantum field series that give rise to that Hamiltonian. And so this is this field theory, I psi. So in this case, it's just a classical quantum field theory, which involves anti-commuting fields. So we have a phi of t is a real scalar field. Plus 1/2 W, and here we have psi. And those are fermionic fields, anti-commuting fields. And so what our task would be to derive that first. And so the first thing is that we need to talk about Grassmann calculus, right? So this is just a calculus on anti-commuting variables, right? So we think about theta 1 and theta 2 as a complex Grassmann parameters. You can think of this as complex Grassmann variables. What makes them Grassmann is that their anti-commutator vanishes, so that theta 1, theta 2 equals minus theta 2, theta 1. What makes them complex is that I can define a notion of complex conjugate, and that notion, they can take a complex conjugate of say theta, and I will get this. This is complex conjugation. And then we will have a rule for a complex conjugation if we have a product of these Grassmann variables, right? So this is very similar to the way how we did for the anti-commuting variables before. So we will assume that a complex conjugate here will give rise to this without any sign flips. All right, so very good. So this is just as far as it concerns the algebra, right? So I guess one thing that I want to mention is that the beauty of Grassmann variables, in particular this anti-commutation relations, is that a Taylor series expansion of any function is very simple. So Taylor series expansion expansion in theta. Okay, so if I have a function f of theta, and I want to write it down as a power series in theta, then that power series will contain just two terms, times theta, okay, and nothing else. And the reason for that, because theta squared equal to zero, and all higher terms will vanish. So Taylor series expansion of functions are particularly simple. Then I guess what we need to introduce is the notion of differentiation and integration. All right. So differentiation is straightforward. So if I have, so there are all the rules of differentiation work. Right. So if I have a product of two Grassmann variables, so this one I can just use a chain rule. Right. So the only difference is that I have to anti-commute the derivative operator across the Grassmann variable. So normally we would have plus here, but because the derivative is with respect to Grassmann variable, we will have minus. We need to anti-commute the differentiation with respect to theta 1. So this is minus theta 1 del over del theta 1 of theta 2. In this case, the answer is just theta 2. So del over del theta 2, using these rules, okay, so it's minus theta 1 del theta 2 over del theta 2 equals minus theta 1. So in other words, formally, I can write down as del over del theta, anti-commutator vanishes. Sorry, doesn't, actually, this equals to 1. All right, so very good. Right, so how can we derive that last identity? Well, it's very straightforward. So what we can do, we can just apply this operator, del over theta, anti-commutator. We can apply it on any function f of theta, right? So what we have is del over del theta. Here I have theta f, and then I have plus theta del over del theta acted on f, right? So I have a product of two functions, so I will have f, and then in order to evaluate derivative on f, I have to anti-commute, and there will be a minus sign once I do anti-commutation, so I have this plus this, and so that gives me a function back f. So this tells me that thinking of this as a differential operator that acts on any function, we show that that differential operator is actually equivalent to a unity, okay? And so we can extend this to conjugate variables as well. So similarly, we have anti-commutator of this equals to 1, and theta anti-commutes with its complex conjugate. Right, so those are the rules of differentiation. And in order to complete the calculus, we have to do integration. You can think of this, that what we are doing is just a definition. What do we mean by doing various operations with Grassmann variables? So we define this integral by definition. So this integral is exactly the same as a derivative, del over del theta acted on theta, so it's equal to 1. And so another thing that we need, d theta on 1, again, following the definition, it's a derivative acted on 1, so it will give us 0. And then we can use the standard properties of the indefinite integral to pretty much compute any integral we want. So if we have multiple integration, d theta 1, d theta 2 equals minus d theta 2, d theta 1. So the differentials in these Grassmann variables and they commute. There is one thing that that is a little bit non-trivial, but you can convince yourself by, for example, expanding, writing down the function in a Taylor series expansion and using the rules of complex conjugation and differentiation. So the rule is this. So if I have any function, A, and if I act on it with a derivative, and then I take a complex conjugate of this, then that is minus 1 to the power A del over del theta bar of A of A conjugate, where this minus 1 to the A equals to plus 1 if A is a bosonic function, if A is bosonic, which what this means that the first component of this function is a boson, right? Is a real number, okay? So A naught, the zeros, the first component in a Taylor series expansion is a real number. And this equals to minus one if A is fermionic. And this simply means that the first component in a Taylor series expansion of the function is actually a Grassmann variable. A naught is Grassmann. All right. All right, guys. So, so that's all we need to know about the Grassmann calculus. Okay, and we can now go back and do our attack. Good. So what we would like to do now is to just use a classical field theory, or you know, classical, if you wish, classical mechanics on generalized coordinate space, and derive from that action, or from that Lagrangian, derives a Hamiltonian there, and then we will quantize it. Okay. So. So looking at the action up there, we can read off what our Lagrangian is. Okay, so in the Lagrangian takes this form, one half pi dot square plus I psi dot psi star psi dot minus one half f prime square plus one half f w prime psi star psi permutate. Okay, so that's our Lagrangian. So let me remind you. So how do we construct a Hamiltonian of a dynamical system? Well, if we start a Lagrangian, and the Lagrangian is characterized by some generalized coordinates, it depends on generalized coordinates. It depends on the derivatives of these generalized coordinates. The first thing, what we construct are the conjugate momenta to generalized coordinates. So pi sub I is just del del L over del Q I dot. So those are the generalized coordinates. And then we can construct a Hamiltonian of the system. So the Hamiltonian of the system is just sum over I Q sub I dot pi sub I minus a Lagrangian, okay? So this is a general procedure. It's a little bit ambiguous procedure if we deal with Grassmann fields, because then we need to specify what order is entering here, and you will see that this actually matters in a second. Okay. Okay, so let's look at our Lagrangian. And so we can construct our conjugate momentum. So there will be a conjugate momentum corresponding to a field phi. That's just del L over del phi dot. So that gives me phi dot. And then there will be a conjugate momentum corresponding to psi, because there is psi dot, but there is no psi dot star. So there will be no conjugate momentum corresponding to psi star. That's zero. And this guy is just del L over del psi dot. Okay, so psi's are our Grassmann fields, and so the only piece that will contribute there is del over del psi dot of I psi star psi dot. So the derivative operator will anti-commute with this, so this gives me minus I psi star. Right, so I have my conjugate momenta. I have an expression how to get the Hamiltonian. So I can compute what the Hamiltonian corresponding to that 0 plus 1 dimensional field theory. So it will be phi dot times pi phi, right, plus psi dot. And then I have psi phi. So notice that I choose here a particular ordering. That's a little ambiguous, but I can define that that's the way how I generalized the Hamiltonian. In case I have anti-commuting generalized coordinates, I will always put Q dot first and the conjugate momentum afterwards. So if you wish, that's a definition for general coordinates. And then I have plus star, pi psi star, and so I have to subtract a Lagrangian, right? So what do we have? So this equals, so the first term is just giving me phi dot squared, okay? So the second term gives me plus I psi star psi dot, right? So there is a minus sign here, and but I multiply it by psi dot. Now I flip the order. Those are Grassmann parameters, that's why I flip the sign. So it's plus. And then plus zero, I don't have, psi star is not a dynamical variable. And now I have to subtract my Lagrangian, minus 1/2 phi dot squared, minus I psi star psi dot, and then plus 1/2 f prime squared, minus 1/2 f double prime psi star psi. Okay? And so if you do the algebra, so these guys go off. And we have 1/2 phi dot squared plus 1/2 f prime squared minus 1/2 f double prime commutator psi star psi. Right, so you can see that indeed that should resolve all the questions that were asked before. How do I think about supersymmetric quantum mechanics as a quantum field theory? So we used explicitly a 0 plus 1 dimensional quantum field theory formalism, and we showed that the Hamiltonian of this quantum field theory is actually the Hamiltonian of the supersymmetric quantum mechanics we discussed before. All right, so very good. So once we are done with classical description, we then go to quantum descriptions. And so what we now need to quantize this quantum field theory. And the quantization, I already mentioned it before, is actually very straightforward. So if I have two functions, f and g, right? And so I look at the Poisson bracket, I look at the Poisson bracket of those two functions. So by definition, this is del phi over del qi, and then, del pi, del g over del qi minus sum over all generalized coordinates, del f over del qi, del g over del pi. So once I have, I start with a classical Poisson bracket. Now if I go to quantum mechanics, or if I quantize a field, I will promote those two into their operators, and I will replace the Poisson bracket with the commutator, okay, of two operators. So we start with three classical fields, phi, psi, and psi star. And so now we will promote those three classical fields into quantum fields. So they will become phi, psi, and psi dagger. Okay. So if I look at a Poisson bracket, so this is a general expression for a Poisson bracket if I have two arbitrary functions, f and g. But it's clear that if I look at the Poisson bracket that involves, so instead of f, I substitute p, and instead of g, I substitute the corresponding q, right? Then the Poisson bracket, if you just use this definition, equal to 1, okay? So it is precisely for this reason that once we go to quantum mechanics and we promote to p and q to operators, the commutator, so now I have instead of a Poisson bracket, I will have a commutator. And the point is that if I multiply it by IH, it will have exactly the same value as a classical Poisson bracket. So it must be the same, okay? So that's, if you wish, their canonical quantization. So what we did is canonical quantization. All right. And so now we have an explicit expressions we know what are our generalized coordinates and generalized momenta. So in particular, we have that conjugate momenta to phi when we compute a Poisson bracket. So this is just the examples that I discussed before. It must equal to 1. So that tells me that if I now look at the commutator of the operator pi and the operator phi, then those two operators commute, and we have this standard commutation relation. Now, we have also a conjugate moment. There is one more dynamical field, and that's our fermion psi. So pi psi with psi, the Poisson bracket, again, equals to 1, because this is just a corresponding conjugate momentum to a particular generalized coordinate. So now I have to promote those guys to, the only difference is that because the fields are fermionic, when I do canonical quantization, instead of having a commutator, I will have anti-commutators. So it will be an anti-commutator. Now I know what a conjugate momentum to psi is, so we computed it before. It's minus I psi star. And so we have a commutator, these guys. I think I have to replace it with psi star minus I h bar. Okay, and I missed I here. So from here, we have the psi and psi dagger. And they commute to H bar. All right. All right, guys, so any questions? So what we want to do now, so there is a, when we talk about the quantum mechanics, there is an operator corresponding to time translation, and that operator is actually Hamiltonian. And so what we would like to do, we would like to realize our supersymmetry, supersymmetry transformations as a translations on a certain auxiliary space. So we want to widen our time into including anti-commuting coordinates as well, so that supersymmetry transformations on this larger space, which we will call a superspace, correspond to translations, okay? So the idea is, so a Hamiltonian of a system is an operator, and I will be more precise in a second, corresponding to time translations. And so what we would like to do, we would like to formulate, so we want to formulate an extension of space-time. Well, in this case, it will be just time, so that we can realize supercharges as a translation operators on this extended space-time, so that we can realize supercharges. Symmetry generators as translations on this extended extended space-time. Which we will call a superspace. Okay, so that's our big logic, the big picture. And so now we'll try to implement it explicitly. All right, so so the easiest starting point is, again, let's go back to ordinary quantum mechanics. So in ordinary quantum mechanics, so I have, this is an operator, so back to quantum mechanics. So O is an operator in Schrodinger representation, operator so meaning that it's time independent. So I can formulate this as an operator in a Heisenberg representation. I can go to a Heisenberg representation. I'm going to a Heisenberg representation. Well, in a picture that will be relevant for the extension to this quantum field theory, this is achieved by multiplying it e to the I p naught t and e to the minus I p naught t, where p naught is the zeros component of the energy momentum tensor, and it's with a lower index, So that corresponds to minus the Hamiltonian. Now, if I look at this Heisenberg representation of my operator, I can ask the question, what is the variation of this operator due to the time change? So delta O. So I just have to vary. I just have to vary the time. Well, this is just O of t plus epsilon, right? Minus O of t. And so what I will have, well, I'm just going to write down the answer, and you will tell me if it's straightforward or if we need, to discuss this in more detail. Right? Is that clear? So what I'm just doing, I'm just taking a derivative pretty much here and here, and making sure that I do not anti-commute something that I don't know if it is commute or do not commute. So that will give rise to this commutation. All right. So, good. So what we are finding, that IP naught is a generator of the infinitesimal time translations. So P naught is a Hermitian operator. P naught dagger equals to P naught, and it's actually a very good reason for that. Because what I want to remind you is that we want our generator. So if I call this generator of space-time translations, we want GT to be anti-Hermitian. Okay, and the reason why we want to do that, well, I can just try to take a Hermitian conjugate here, right? So I have delta T of some operator O is epsilon times the generator of a translation with this operator O. So now if I take a Hermitian conjugate of that, okay, so what I will get, I will get epsilon, right? And then I have to take a Hermitian conjugate of the commutator, but the order inside the commutator will change. So I will have this. Okay, if I want to write it down in this way. On the other hand, we want this operator to be a universal operator corresponding to translations in time, and it shouldn't care whether we try to translate an operator or its Hermitian conjugate. So they still must be true that it's the same as GT O dagger. And so that tells us that we better have the operator corresponding to translations to be an anti-Hermitian operator. And that's exactly the reason why it naturally comes to be like that. Okay, so very good. It's a good question. All right, so let's see. All right, so we will use exactly the same analogy for the supersymmetry variations. So by analogy, so we have two operators, Q and Q star, right? So those are the operators that were our superchargers. They were corresponding to the generators of the supersymmetry transformations. Those are generators of supersymmetry transformations. And so, so by analogy, if I have any field psi, so if I act on it with this supersymmetry variation, I should expect it to take this form, epsilon. So now epsilon, well, let me see, epsilon, so this is Susi variation. So I'm trying to extend the analogy of the, so this is the expression, maybe better this one, this is the expression for the infinitesimal infinitesimal variation corresponding to a set and symmetry in our theory. In this case, it was translation along the time direction. And so now what I'm trying to say is that we will take the supercharges, the generators of the supersymmetry, and we will say that the supersymmetry variation of the field will take exactly the same form, okay? So plus epsilon, epsilon q star, the commutator, okay? In order for this definition to make sense, as before, we want, so this is a generator generator of Susi transformations. And it better be an anti-Hermitian operator. So well, maybe I should have a dagger here. But so if I take a dagger here, okay, so it's Q star, okay, epsilon, right? So epsilon now is a complex infinitesimal parameter. So I just take a complex conjugate here, and the complex conjugate tells me that I need to flip the order, and the star of epsilon will give me epsilon. And then plus I have Q epsilon star. And now epsilon is an infinitesimal Grassmann parameter here. And so they will commute with Q and Q star. So this is minus epsilon Q star plus epsilon star Q, which is exactly what we need for the generator to be anti-Hermitian. All right? Good. So let's keep extending our analogy, right? So one way how we can think about infinitesimal variation of a certain operator is by commuting this operator with the generator corresponding to the symmetry transformation. But there is another way, right? So I told you, so it's pretty much coming from the expression there, that delta t of O is just O of t plus epsilon, sorry, minus O of t. So what I can do, I can just do a Taylor series expansion here. And so I will have epsilon epsilon del t q of t, sorry, O of t. Okay? So in other words, what we are trying to do here is to realize this formal operator that acts on a Hilbert space as a differential operator on the spacetime. So in this case, we can see that the operator, so if I can, if I'm to compare those two things, I see that del t, O of t, I should identify, so we should identify this, okay, with a commutator GT and O, okay? And, well, in general, I'm going to write down, okay. So in general, I'm going to write it down in this way. So if I have some operator corresponding to conserved charge of a certain global symmetry, so this this is a variation delta chi, right? If I think of this as in terms of the field, right? This is actually delta O. So the next line in analogy what we discussed here, I want to think of this as some differential operator on this global symmetry time translation. So this is some differential operator O pi acted Q acted on O. Okay. So this is what I call chi is a symmetry variation. And what we established so far that when the symmetry variation chi is time translation, then the operator that enters here in the infinitesimal variation, the charge is just IP naught, right? And the corresponding differential operator, Q pi, is just del over del T. Okay, so P naught, I told you that this is minus I Hamiltonian, and so we have del over del T. And so the correspondence is that in ordinary quantum mechanics, just following this discussion, we will identify a Hamiltonian, an operator, with this differential operator of time translation. So from this perspective, the Schrodinger equation that you are familiar with, del T of psi equals h bar of psi, is sort of a tautology. You think about the same objects acting on your wave function, and you think of that object on one hand as being an operator, and on the other hand, you think of that as being a corresponding differential operator. So what we would like to do is to repeat exactly the same thing in the case of supersymmetry variations, okay? And so for this reason, I need to introduce a superspace and realize, so before we were thinking about supersymmetry transformations as epsilon times a supercharge, and those supercharges were expressed in terms of fields, right? So this is what we discussed, whatever the last lecture or lecture before. And what we would like to do now is to repeat this procedure and find out what is the corresponding differential operator on some extended time, on some expanded space-time, and then we'll have a complete analogy. Okay, so the first thing I need to explain is what is this extended time, extended space-time, and that's the notion of a superspace. So we now introduce a superspace. So you can think of this is that in addition to just labeling fields by their position in time, we also label it by its position in two additional coordinates. The only unusual fact is that those coordinates are actually Grassmann coordinates. So we start with space-time. In our case, of course, it's just time, but I'm talking in general because that's exactly the same procedure we would be doing in higher-dimensional supersymmetric models. And so we extend the time And now our coordinate besides time has two Grassmann coordinates, okay, theta and theta theta conjugate. Okay, so those are two Grassmann coordinates. Now, what happens is that before our fields depended only on time. But and by the way, this is what we call a superspace, right? So this is our superspace. So a point in a spacetime before was labeling by the value of the time coordinate. Now a point in a superspace has a triple. So before on this spacetime, we defined functions. Now we define fields. So this was a field. Okay. So correspondingly to that, on a superspace, we will define a superfield. So phi is a superfield. Now, it will get a little bit confusing at first, but then very natural. So I'm going to use the same, very often same variables, and it will be clear from a context what exactly do I mean. So here, our superfield is a function that varies over a superspace. So it depends on theta and theta star in addition to time. And so now here comes a beauty of the superspace. I can write down the most general expression for the superfield in terms of what we know components. So now what we do, a component expansion of a superfield. So what this means is that we do a Taylor series expansion, okay, and so what we will have, our superfield, and so I'm doing a Taylor series expansion Grassmann variables. So it will take the following form, phi of t, unfortunately, well, maybe sometimes I have to write it this way. So this is a superfield, and you will see in a second why. And then, now the way how, how many terms more do I have in this Taylor series expansion? I'm doing a Taylor series expansion in those two coordinates. How many more terms will I have?
Three
more, right? Because I cannot square theta star, but I can take a product of them. And of course, because if I think of this as a scalar field, so each term, well, it's incorrect. If I think of this as a bosonic field, a bosonic commuting superfield, then this means that if I am going to write it down as a sum, that means that each term in this sum must have the same transformation properties, meaning that it must either be a bosonic combination or a fermionic combination. If the first one is a bosonic combination, then the next one, which will include powers of theta, will be fermionic. So, well, let me write it down. So I'm going to write it down in this way: minus theta star psi star plus theta theta star times f. Okay. So, what I just told you is that if this field is a bosonic, then each term here is a bosonic. That tells me that those two terms, so this is a function, this is a most general Taylor series expansion. So one superfield, phi, actually corresponds to phi of t, psi of t, and f of t, right? So this is just a complex, complex conjugate. Sorry? Yes. So I mean that this is a real a real bosonic superfield. Okay. So that the first part is just a real bosonic field. Those are fermionic fields. They are anti-commuting, and so notice that here I choose a particular order. So this is a convention that we will always follow, because if I change the order, I will get an extra minus sign. So this is a convention that we will follow, and so here I have already a product of two fermionic, a product of two anti-commuting variables. So that makes capital F again a bosonic field. Okay. And again, the reality condition implies that capital F is also a real field. So what we have, we actually managed to assemble different fields with different, if you wish, commutation properties in spacetime into a single concept. And that single concept is a superfield, okay? So again, as I said before, what we have here is a component expansion. So most the current research in supersymmetry, mostly people just deal with superfields, and you will see in a second that combining these different components in this particular way has its advantages. And one of the advantages is that we will be able to, it turns out that it's very straightforward to write effective action in terms of superfield, okay? And then if you ask, okay, so what is my quantum field theory that has a supersymmetry? So the supersymmetry will be manifest in the superfield representation of quantum field theory. And it will be somewhat obscure once we write down our quantum field theory in terms of components. So we will try to see exactly how that's going on. Right. Okay, very good. So delta epsilon acted on my superfield, right? So I'm just writing from the previous discussion that there is certain supersymmetry transformations with our supercharges acting as generators of those supersymmetry transformations. Plus psi. Q star, and then acted on pi. Okay, and what we've seen is that there should be a differential representation of this supersymmetry variation, and so I'm going to write this down as Q without hats. Okay, so there is a hat here. And plus epsilon Q hat without hat acted on pi. So so in this second line, those guys are differential operators. Differential operators on superspace. That would correspond to infinitesimal supersymmetry translation. Yes.
It's Grassmann parameter. Let me put it this way. So when we do a variation of the field, so the field is changing by some small object. What we want that the variation in the field does not change the property of the field. So if our superfield was bosonic,
After the variation, it stays bosonic. So we do not, if you wish, change the statistics of our superheat. So in order to achieve that is to make sure that the generators of the symmetry transformation, in this case it will be supersymmetry, are bosonic. Now we know that those generators of supersymmetry transformation must involve supercharges, okay? But they are fermionic. So I need a Grassmann variable, a Grassmann infinitesimal parameter that will multiply this supercharge in order that the whole combination here is a bosonic. And what we showed is that it's actually good that this guy is Grassmann, because that would guarantee that this operator is anti-Hermitian. And it must be anti-Hermitian because we should be able to use exactly the same generator independently whether we look at the field or at its Hermitian conjugate. It doesn't have to. So it can be fermionic, and in fact we will study, for example, it turns out that if we try to, just running a little bit ahead, if we start with a scalar quantum field theory, we take a complex scalar field, and we want to build a superfield out of that. That will give rise to a superfield with the first component there being our complex scalar field. So in this context, in our discussion, that would correspond to a bosonic superfield, okay? Or better to say, a commuting superfield, right? On the other hand, if I take a gauge field, and if I try to ask exactly the same question, how do I supersymmetrize something that will involve a gauge potential? So it turns out that, well, supersymmetrization involves adding fermions if I start with bosons. However, it turns out that for a vector superfield, so in that case we will get a vector superfield, the first component here, the one that's not being multiplied by thetas, will be a fermion. So a vector superfield will be an anti-commuting superfield. So the only thing is that what I was saying, it doesn't matter whether this field is commuting or anti-commuting. What is crucial that the variation under supersymmetry does not change the fact that the field was commuting or anti-commuting. And just saying that implies that the corresponding generator must be a bosonic operator. Right? This must be bosonic, right? It must be a universal operator, much like, you know, when we talk about, say, quantum field theory or, say, quantum mechanics. In our quantum mechanics, there were scalar field phi and there were fermion field psi. But if I ask the question, how does my bosonic or fermionic fields transform due to time translations, I will use exactly the same operator on both of them. That operator will be Hamiltonian, okay? So in other words, if there is a symmetry in my theory and my theory has various fields, there is a, if you wish, better be a well-defined, unique generator corresponding to that symmetry transformation, all right, guys? So the thing is that those are, so maybe it will be easier for you to think in this way to what I'm gonna do. So if I think of this as operators on the Hilbert space, you know that they commute to minus I h bar, right? But then what I can do, I can realize this as a differential operator. So I can choose my generalized coordinate Q and then realize the other operator as a differential operator on configuration space. So in this case, Q will be just my coordinate X, right? And then P hat, I can think of this minus H bar del X. And so then this commutation relation will simply become a commutation relation involving differential operator. This is just, again, x times 1 is a sort of trivial differential operator. And so you see minus I h bar del over del x acted on x commutator is minus I H bar. So what I'm trying to do now is that I want to realize, so here we had an expression for the supercharges in terms of fields in our supersymmetric quantum mechanics, something like this. And so now what I want to do, now I want to realize these operators as a differential operators, but I have to do it in such a way that I preserve the algebra, right, the commutation algebra. So in this case, remember the commutation algebra was what? It was just a supersymmetry, right? So this was equal to 2H, QQ was equal to 0, Q star, it was equal to 0. So this is, this was just our supersymmetry. And so now I want to guess those operators as a differential operators on this extended superspace in such a way that I can still realize my supersymmetry algebra. And so I'm just going to give you the answer, and we will verify that that's indeed the case. Well, for the Hamiltonian, we know what is the differential operator corresponding to the Hamiltonian. This is just I del over del t. And so what I have to do, I just have to supply to you the differential operators Q and Q star. So that's del over del theta. And then here I have plus theta star del over del t. Maybe I write this del over del t. And then I have Q dagger, right? So del over del Q star plus I Q del over del T. So a good homework exercise is to actually convince yourself that that if I take Q and I can take a dagger of it, I will get what I call Q dagger. Okay, so it's a little bit, well, in some sense, that's okay. So you just have to think a little bit about this piece, that the signs here are correct. But here it's obvious, because I del over del t is a Hermitian operator, so a Hermitian conjugate of it will not flip the sign. And so theta is just a coordinate, and so the Hermitian conjugate of it is just a complex conjugate. And so there is no sign flip in our definition of Grassmann variable theta. Okay, so at least those pieces, it's clear that this is satisfied, and you just have to think a little bit that it satisfies there as well. So let's look at this Q anti-commutator, QQ dagger, and I want to do this thinking of this as being a differential operator, right? So this is Q dagger plus Q dagger Q equals. Well, so if I have do I have to write it down, or we can just look at the blackboard and follow? That will save me lots of writing, right? So the only non-trivial thing will be if this Grassmann derivative will act here and here. Otherwise, it will anti-commute, right? And you can see that from this, the only non-trivial piece will be when this operator will act on this one, okay? So all the other guys will get canceled because of the anti-commuting property of theta, okay? And so you can see that the first term will give I del t. Now the second term will give you exactly the same. So you have plus I del t, which is 2 I del t, which is exactly h, what you expect. Sorry, not h, which is 2h. What you expect for a supersymmetry algebra. And you can verify that the other, for example, QQ anti-commutator would vanish, because del over del Q, when acted on Q star, will give you 0. Okay, so this will be just 2. You can think of this that Q and Q will automatically vanish because because del over del theta over theta bar equals to zero. There will be no non-trivial terms. Those are just, you can think of this as just being two Grassmann numbers, and they are anti-commute. All right? Good. So so now once we realized our supersymmetry generators as differential operators on the superspace, I can ask the question, what does the infinitesimal translation, right? So we know what infinitesimal translation so first of all, how would I know this, right? How would I, because we are sort of going backwards compared what we do in quantum mechanics. In quantum mechanics, we know that a priori, and here what we do, we want to invent things in such a way that it's consistent with before. So I know that if I start with a superfield phi, right, and if I act on it, so this is a superfield that depend on coordinates in the superspace, and a differential operator corresponding to translations takes this form. Okay, but I should be able, right? So let me just give the analogy. Let me give the analogy, and then I will stop if you guys agree with that. So in the case of a space-time translation, the question is the following. So suppose there is an operator corresponding to differential operator corresponding to space-time translation, right? And I know that it acts on the field phi, and I know that it acts phi epsilon del over del t acted on my field phi, right? So just looking here, I know that the infinitesimal time translation corresponds t goes to t plus epsilon. Is that clear? How do I know that? Well, because if I take a field phi, right, and if I do this infinitesimal translation, then I just do Taylor series expansion in epsilon, and I will find out that this is exactly the transformation that I have. Okay? So we're going to use exactly the same logic to figure out what is the corresponding translation in a superspace. So we know exactly now what are these differential operators. As the differential operators, they realize supersymmetry algebra. And so so this epsilon star, right, del over del theta plus I del over del t plus epsilon del over del theta star, and then I have plus plus I epsilon theta del over del t, right? And so that guy was acted on our superfield phi, right? So right? So let me collect pieces here, right? So the, what I have, okay, the reason why I hang up, because I just get confused with a complex conjugate. So this must be the right one, okay? So this must be the right one. So let me just fix it here, and then I will try to fix it next time. So if this is the case, right, then what do we have? We have I epsilon theta star plus I epsilon star theta, okay, del over del t acted on phi, right? So I'm just, so I have three coordinates in my superspace time and two Grassmann coordinates. And I'm looking, if I do an infinitesimal translation in a superspace, what does that translation correspond to in my superspace? So for that reason, I need to collect terms that involve del over del t, del over del theta, and del over del theta bar. So plus epsilon del over del theta acted on phi. That's so altogether, there should be four terms, two here, third one, plus epsilon star del over del theta phi, okay? So now, after I fudged some of the conjugation things, I'm going to write down the right answer. And so you can see, if I do a supersymmetry, if I start at a point in the superspace, right? So I start t theta and theta star, and then I just do a SUSY translation, supersymmetry translation. This supersymmetry translation will affect all three coordinates, and it will affect it in this way. So I will have t plus I epsilon theta star plus I epsilon star theta. So the time coordinate will get shifted by this much, which you can read off directly from the way how the differential operators act. Theta gets shifted by epsilon, and theta star gets shifted by epsilon star. All right? Good. All right, guys. So, yes.
So the easiest way to fix it, but I was losing it. That's all right that I could. In fact, you know, you're absolutely right. It looks like that this will fix everything if I were to go back and just write it up in this way.
Good. So then I don't have to go back to it. Great. So now, so we understand what the supersymmetry translation is, but now we would like to figure out how does supersymmetry variation changes the components of the superfield. So if you open some book on a supersymmetry, the first thing you find out is that a supersymmetry transformation changes bosonic and fermionic fields. What this means that if we act with a supersymmetry transformation on a supersymmetry multiplet, different components of that multiplet get mixed with itself, okay? And so we would like to see this explicitly, okay? So let's go back, and this is our superfield. So this is epsilon star. Okay, so I really have to fix that, so I will think. So I'll q plus epsilon q dagger phi. Okay, so that's the action on the superfield. Right, so that's why I need to fix it. right? So on the other hand, this is the same as Q as an operator plus epsilon Q star acted on the field, the commutator. Okay. So pretty much, yeah, I guess it's not. Yeah, can do that. Okay, now we are all right. Okay, so now if I compare those two things, so this tells me that if I act with my operator Q, and if I act on it on a superfield, so that's the same as acting with this differential operator Q on the superfield. Okay, and I know what my differential operator Q is. So this is del over del theta plus I theta star del over del t. Okay, so notice what I'm doing. I'm computing commutators of my superfield with supercharges, and for those reasons I use the differential operators. So I have phi plus theta psi minus theta star psi star plus theta theta star f. Okay, and so what do I have? Well, let's look here. Del over del theta. So the only thing that will survive will be this term and this term. And so it will give me psi, right? Psi plus theta star f. And then I have to act with this operator, right? So this operator, once I act here, will give me phi dot, right? So it's just a time derivative of phi. And then the only other way where this can act is on psi, right? So, and I'm gonna anti-commute those two Grassmann variables. So I will get it in this way, psi dot, okay? So I can do the same. I can do the same with compute the conjugate supercharge commutator with the superfield, right? So this is the differential operator Q dagger acted on phi, right? So the operator is up there, so del over del theta star plus I theta del over del t, and then acted psi minus theta star psi star plus theta theta star f. So it's analogous computation, right? So the answer here is minus psi star theta f plus I theta phi dot minus I theta theta star, sorry, psi dot star, okay? All right, so any questions? So so the reason why we are doing that, because now I can write down the supersymmetry transformation of my superfield, right? So this is epsilon Q as a differential operator plus Q dagger acted on the superfield, okay? So I can collect both terms, star psi star, and then I have plus theta star f plus I phi dot. So I'm just collecting, the full variation of the superfield due to supersymmetry transformations. So plus epsilon theta I phi star minus F, and then I have minus theta star epsilon psi dot plus epsilon star psi dot star. Okay, so basically all I did is just to took this combination, multiplied it by epsilon star, and took a combination here, multiplied it by epsilon, and added it together. Okay? So, so why did I do that? It's because now I know how my supersymmetry transformation acts on different components of the superfield, right? So I know, recall that our superfield was this. So what I'm doing now, I'm comparing this with the corresponding variations, right? So so I have that little phi. So this little phi, how does little phi transform? Well, in the Taylor series expansion of a superfield, little phi is just the term in a Taylor series expansion that doesn't contain theta and theta stars. So the transformation of the bosonic component, the first bosonic component, is just epsilon psi minus epsilon star psi star. Okay? And so you can see that under the supersymmetry variation, our bosonic field transforms into a fermionic, is modified by the fermionic fields. Then I can look at how does my field psi transform. Okay, so I can look at the expansion of the superfield, and I can see that psi is a component of the superfield that comes with a parameter theta, right? So this is my parameter theta. And so I see that it transforms as minus epsilon, right? So I need to anti-commute it, epsilon and theta, so that I can compare with this expression here. So basically what I'm doing, I'm saying that the transformation of the superfield is delta phi plus theta delta psi minus theta star delta psi star plus theta theta star delta f. Okay, so that's a variation of the superfield due to variation of each of the component of the superfield. And since I know the explicit expression for the variation of the full superfield, I can read off how my components transform, and that's where I got this. So this gives me minus epsilon I phi dot minus F. So then I have delta psi star. So I need to put theta star at the beginning, right? So I will have a minus sign, but then I have a minus here. So this guy transforms as plus, this guy. There must be star somewhere. So where is the star? So this, let's see. So this guy is star. The star is here. Okay. So this is epsilon star. So this is epsilon, and then I have F plus I phi dot. And the most important thing is the transformation of F under the supersymmetry variation. So the transformation of F is given by that. So it's minus I epsilon psi dot, and then I have plus epsilon star psi psi dot, sorry, this star here and no star. But there is a star here. All right? So what we derived an action of the supersymmetry transformation of the component. And for the next lecture, the most important aspect will be that, so notice that bosonic components transform by fermionic components. Fermionic components get corrections due to bosonic components. But the largest term in a Taylor series expansion, so F is also known a highest component. A highest component of a superfield. Okay, and so what we just discovered with you that the highest component of the superfield transforms as a total total derivative. Okay. So all the other components, they do not transform as total derivatives, but the highest component has this beautiful property that it transforms as a total derivative, because this thing here is just minus del t of I epsilon star psi plus epsilon psi star psi naught. All right, guys, so it's a good time to end, and we'll continue next time with constructing supersymmetric Lagrangians.